the essential podcast for educators in the UK. Made by teachers, for teachers.
Hello and welcome to Homework Podcast. Today we are going to be discussing the line between parental responsibility and the responsibility that schools have for providing children with their experiences, the broader curriculum that we've talked about, and obviously the recently announced Activity Passport. But first, gentlemen, our moments of the week. So what have we got? Who would like to kick us off?
I'm very happy to jump straight in. My moment of the week for the second time in about four or five episodes involves a gentleman, a very tall strawberry blonde gentleman sitting
handsome,
to my left.
Handsome,
rugged strawberry blonde. It involves an incident, shall we say, that happened before school one day this week. An incident involving his very long and gangly legs. Sam was walking joyously across the classroom with three coffees in his hands when he took a rather heavy tumble. Now, this would be a shame, but it was a rather greater shame because Sam pulled the school laptop, or a school laptop, off the table, shattered the screen, and I've never seen a face quite like it. He had to walk tail between his legs to our head teacher. His lips were shaking.
Dickens is back.
He, oh my
come
gosh.
On, come on, David.
Either way, he got away with it.
Thank you, David, for that ring endorsement of my...
I mean, you missed out the important bit there. So it was smashed, yes?
Laptop screen destroyed. Sam in bits. But he got away with it. He was forgiven.
My laptop, which is the big disaster, and then having to try and find one to replace it for my friends.
Do you know the only thing that would have been better there is if the kids had seen?
Yeah. Oh my gosh. It's the sort of thing that if a child did, it would be like a major, major issue, wouldn't it? But
it's a terrible calamity, really.
So, Sam, have you got a story about David, or is it?
Might save my stories for David for another time. This week, mine is by no means as sort of dangerous as what David just said, but I was teaching space in my class this week. And we'd done a pre-assessment and we were talking about our solar system and the planets and just sort of seeing what the children already knew about them. And one particular child in my class who I was working with, I suppose it kind of links to our podcast today really, but he isn't possibly surrounded by different sort of experiences at home. And he doesn't have that much knowledge on the area, so we were talking about it. And I just said, can you tell me one fact about the planet Venus? And he just looked at me completely blankly. And just said, completely deadpan, he's like, do you know what, Mr. Stewart? Can't? I said, well, why not? He goes, I've not been there yet.
He's thinking big.
He's like, oh gosh, he's going to be an absolute hero in a few years' time. Sure he's the first man that gets to Venus. But it made me laugh, and it's just the sort of innocence of youth.
Yeah, too right. Mine's slightly more, slightly less sort of pure and altruistic.
Oh dear.
No, not at all.
There's a theme here.
Obviously, I mean, it's that kind of thing that we all know that schools can be very highly pressured places. We know that people can get stressed a lot, etc. So obviously, you get your fun where you can, kind of thing. One of my favourite things at the moment is making people jump. Especially, I'm an early riser. I'm in school for about 7:15. And I have a colleague, and now this colleague, weirdly actually, this is her second appearance in our moment of the week. And this is the same colleague.
This is the Christmas
office,
lady.
I've bedecked.
We'll have to get her on.
Yeah, she'll have to. She'd love it. Anyway, so I noticed her going into the store cupboard. Our store cupboard. I think my boss actually described it. genuine story as an Aladdin's cave of stationery.
Oh,
a shop advert last year. Shout out to Mr. Cobbler.
If you've got any print sticks.
Yeah, exactly. This is the place to come. Yeah. No little extras needed. So I saw her go in. Now, I wear a general gentleman's shoe. It has a clippy cloppy sound.
Is
there
it a brogue?
A substantial heel. No, it's an Oxford. It's an Oxford.
An Oxford. Yeah. Lovely.
So noticed her going in. I'm tippy-toeing over. I mean, I stand at a godlike 6'4", 5"-ish.
And a bit.
And
in his Oxford.
I mean, I can barely see David. Anyway, we digress. So I creep in, and I obviously do my generic boo, and she shrieked. Now this would have been, like this would have been good if it was just once, but over the course of this week, I think I've got her three times to the point that I actually managed to do it yesterday whilst there were still children in the building, and she screamed "Ben" to such an extent that I actually said to her, "Look, I think we might have to stop this because
just draw a line for the highest she's going to
write. I mean, I've waited for 10 minutes before in hiding to try.
Just in a cupboard.
Yeah, yeah, just behind the wall.
She's going to think you're following her.
Anyway, so well, that's my moment of the week. Anyway, I hope that brought some joy and wonder to your
certainly did to us.
So back to the kind of serious stuff. Now this is a serious topic. You know, I mean, I would say that I know that there were several people that started talking on Twitter about how the idea of kind of a commitment to your child or a promise to the children in your school of kind of the things that you're enable them to experience has been around for a long time. We had as a staff, we created our list. We spoke to parents and as a school community, we came up with our list, and it's actually emblazoned on our.
I've seen that, the charter.
Our charter. That's it. Our charter. And it is stuff that, fine, yeah, parents could technically enable their children to do.
Sure.
But we wanted it to be a promise to every child that comes in at reception that by the end of the school year, at the end of their schooling with us, they would have had the opportunity to do these things.
Sure.
And it's stuff like sleeping on the school field, it's stuff like performing in a play, etc., etc., etc. Now, I get the government wanting to, or the DfE wanting to ensure that all children have these opportunities.
Yep.
However, it's already being done.
Mm.
And to be quite frank, for the children in communities that are so pressurised and so in areas of extreme social deprivation, yes, there is an element that they should be able to go to the theatre and they should be able to go to the beach, etc. Of course they should. Every child in this country should have the same opportunities. However, there are also schools up and down the country opening during the holidays to feed their children.
Yeah. Yeah.
There are also schools opening on a Saturday to make sure that their families have a food bank to access. Mm. Maybe we need to look at other social issues that affect schools and families and communities in a more extreme way before the government spend an awful lot of money producing a frankly ridiculous passport that has been lambasted and mocked.
You seem a fan, Ben. I take it you're a fan.
But we didn't need it. We didn't need it.
Yeah, no,
we
I agree.
We didn't need it. If schools were
we
bothered
before.
Yeah, if schools were bothered by it, no school is genuinely going from a situation of doing nothing to a situation of doing all these things.
No, and if they were, that would have surely been picked up long, long before now.
I don't think you can call yourself a school. If you're not doing some of the things on those lists that you see already, you're not doing what a school should be doing.
For me, this seems like a knee-jerk reaction to what is becoming quite a trend in, from the government in terms of education at the moment, which is after massively pummeling focus onto English and maths, there now seems to be a bit of an eye-opener that, surprise, surprise, some things are perhaps not getting as much curriculum time as they may have previously got. What can we do about this? That's produced some branded paraphernalia.
Yeah.
I think we as teachers know the importance of giving children broad and wide experiences, and we try our very best to create opportunities for this. Sometimes it doesn't happen as freely, I guess, in every school day as we would like, because there are other time constraints. But schools are putting on lots of trips, lots of experiences, lots of wider learning. And as you say, I think this sample size, I think Sam probably knows better than me, but I believe the basis for the activity passport, Sam, you were saying earlier, it was a fairly small sort of sample size, was it, that let this come about?
I think so. Obviously, Damien Hines, Secretary for State Education, he was sort of the man behind the idea of this activity passport. And he obviously initially went about it through sort of lots of discussions with people he met, and according to the results of those conversations, was that the public's desire, really, beyond the classroom, is for their children to be happy and healthy.
Mm-hmm.
Which, to me, is not a shock. That's common
sense. Yeah, and to be fair, I'd actually hope it's before the classroom.
Yeah.
Like, if you ask a teacher what they want their children to be, happy is surely number one before we even talk about learning.
So it does worries me slightly that our Secretary for State Education is now sort of devising all these wonderful plans because he's just spoken to a few people.
I think it's original. Yeah. He thinks it's original.
I know. And there have been things in the past. We've had the 50 things to do before you're 11 and 3/4, which was a National Trust initiative was set up. And he basically went into a school in Bristol, and I hope I pronounced this correctly, St Werber's Primary School in Bristol. And they,
just like
Ben's saying, they've got their own in-house charter or list of things they want their children to do. And obviously, X number of people have gone in and thought, wow, that's amazing.
Mm.
Had they gone into many other schools and seen they're doing it elsewhere, the need to make this passport, I think, would be completely redundant.
And do you know what it is? The fact is that, as we've already discussed, most schools are doing this anyway, just because they're not writing it down.
Yeah.
Now, we've already discussed here about workload about time pressures. Mm. Are they honestly suggesting that at the start of each child's journey through a school that they are supposed to be printed, or is it online? Either way,
I've seen some grids and assessment frameworks. Yeah.
Are they honestly suggesting that we tick these off? It is absolute garbage.
Laughable, isn't it? And a lot of them don't fit the correct age.
But then we're told that you can adapt. It's a fluid document.
So it's doing Tudor banquets in year R, year five.
You're doing a Victorian school in year five, despite the fact that Victorians is most commonly taught in year six. Mm. Like, it's almost as if someone that doesn't know the curriculum has written it.
It's very silly. And I think what's also important to say is, every school is different, as we know. There's different schools in different catchments and they have different priorities. There will be schools in hugely deprived areas where certain life experiences are perhaps more important to offer their children than others. There'll be schools in slightly more affluent areas, slightly different catchments, where they take a slightly different route to offering those life experiences. It does seem the way in educational policy, trying to create a sort of one size fits all approach.
Absolutely.
trying to blanket everybody with that, instead of once again giving school leaders the chance to think what works for my school, putting the trust in the leaders, the teachers, letting them deliver a program that's going to suit their community, their children. Instead, it's people that aren't actually in the schools dipping their toe into. Yeah, it's probably quite a well-chosen school. There's probably a lot of work that went into picking this school in Bristol.
Yeah, yeah.
But they do that for a very short period of time. And yes, okay, we'll do this and everyone's got to follow it. It just seems laughable to me.
I think as well, you've got to look at something. I'm looking at the Year 5 list right in front of me now. And there's so many things on here that there will be schools in this country where children have done all of those things
completely.
Before they get to Year 5. Because they are lucky enough to be born into a situation where they've got wonderful home lives, or their school, or just in general, they do have these experiences. Yeah.
Now, so playing devil's advocate on that point then, and I guess Mr. Hines would say, what about the kids that aren't?
Of course.
So is it that this has come from a point of view that if you are a small, single form, potentially rural, isolated school, and you don't, you haven't thought about this, I mean, I know we've already said, surely you should be, but you haven't thought about your wider offering, is it that they're saying, we're here to help. Would they not be fulfilling their obligations if they just said do a wider curriculum and left it at that?
Is this something that is this something that you would hope that inspections would have picked up anyway though in these schools?
Let's be simple about this. Inspections historically have not given a damn about the wider curriculum.
And
we would be more than happy for someone from Ofsted to come and speak to us about that.
Definitely,
because I've stood in front of Sean Harford and seen him and heard him apologise for that fact.
Yeah.
So just because they've now decided, actually there is a wider curriculum and it is important, having already shifted the curriculum and made it a lot harder and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Now they've just suddenly realised, our children, there are schools up and down the country that are doing all of their work focused just on SATs.
I mean, if Ofsted are giving a little bit more priority to this sort of thing is almost like a forewarning ahead of judgments moving forward,
and
isn't it?
I can acknowledge that.
Giving a little bit of a prompt, I guess, to schools that aren't. But again, the way it's delivered, and I think we can say when it was delivered, was particularly interesting timing, wasn't it?
I mean, as you said
before, Ben, it was. Was it first couple of days, Christmas holidays, teachers sort of, it's just what you need, isn't it?
Well, Michael Tibbet obviously wrote the article for the TES where he said it's just the hilarity. And again, we'd love someone from the DfE to talk to us, talk to anyone and actually tell us why they think it's necessary to drop this stuff on us.
Yeah.
When we're supposed to be taking our break.
It's also a ludicrous time of year, isn't it? Halfway through the school year, you've got a 6-week summer holiday.
It's almost as if someone thought about it in the autumn term and went, we could do that once they're all busy.
Yeah, it's just completely ridiculous.
So we've talked about that, and I think we've made our opinions quite clear. But what we haven't looked at, and obviously I guess is the kind of drive for this pod, is where does parental responsibility come into it? Now, we've obviously got a lot of experiences on that list, but also more than that. Now, the big ones, kind of being able to get dressed for infants and for some juniors.
Yep.
Telling the time. Fine, it's on our maths curriculum, but it's perhaps one of the big things that our children...
There's huge
disparities between different children.
Yep.
Tying up your shoelaces, washing your hands, using a knife and fork.
Yep.
Now, and I guess are these things teaching obligations, or are they parental obligations primarily?
I think it is a tricky situation, because obviously some home lives for children are not situations that do allow some of these things to happen. smoothly. Like, we, I'm assuming around this table, have all been in a situation where we have been lucky enough to be taught those things
sure.
at a young age by our parents. And actually, we were taught at Hogwarts. By professors. But we were lucky enough to be in that situation. We can't profess to know exactly what it's like,
no.
I imagine, to be in other situations. But I do think that as teachers, we have a lot of mopping up,
yeah.
which Good does fall under
sometimes, literally.
And I think...
Yeah, yeah, no, but it is, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think yeah. there's things that surprise us daily
yeah.
that children can't do.
Yeah, I mean, I just off the top of my head, I have a child in my class who's got several several younger siblings. This child is, you know, an 8-year-old who is often up in the night, woken up in the night, sort of, you know, giving a bottle to a younger child. That sort of thing. You've got to think how much is put on these children mm-hmm. and how, in strained family backgrounds, how difficult is it to perhaps be able to develop in the way that some mm-hmm. others can.
Yeah, that must be really tough. And I think like, something springs to my mind. Like, I had a child a couple of years ago who every day would bring in a banana to eat at break time. And obviously, I was completely happy with the fact he's bringing something healthy to eat, but he was never eating it. So I had a discussion and he was like, do you not really like bananas? Have you spoken to your parents at home about giving you a different piece of fruit? He was like, no, I like them. I was like, but you've never eaten them? And he goes, yeah, I don't know how to peel it.
Oh my gosh, and yeah.
To me,
but he didn't want to ask because he was embarrassed.
He didn't want to ask because he was yeah. embarrassed and he saw other people eating them. And actually, I could see him trying to sort of watch and see what they were doing.
Yeah, it's terribly sad.
Banana, it just baffled me. And it took me 5 minutes to talk through. It's not a big deal. You can do it. And I just showed him. But
yeah,
like
took you 5 minutes to open a banana.
very.
It's got very big hands.
It's really ripe.
Yeah. But like that to me, that's something that at home.
Yeah.
If you're giving your child a banana, you need to teach him how to peel it.
And I mean, I think that it is so hard. And I think that the big issue is the disparity across the country and the disparity across just the class, where you can have some children. I mean, we are not here to judge what makes a good parent, but
I
think everyone would accept that teaching your children how to function, how to wipe the backside, how to blow their nose, how to wash their hands, how to get dressed is important. And we've children should be in a position when they come to school, especially when they start moving into Key Stage 1 and Key Stage 2, where they are ready to rock and roll.
Yeah.
And we have no issue with reminding children how to tie their laces, or no issue with helping, we teach them how to tell the time.
Yeah.
But there has to be some level of support, or there needs to be. And I think that with the destruction of the Sure Start centres and things like that, it's becoming more and more difficult for schools to help parents in parenting, if you know what I mean. Now, we've all, like, early help plans and stuff like that, talking to them about bedtimes, talking to them about toilet training. Like, there has to be, it has to come both ways.
Yeah.
And I think we've all sat in situations where we've talked to a parent and they've sat there and told you exactly what you want to hear. Yeah. And as awful as it is, you know in your head they're absolutely lying. That they will walk out the door and nothing will change. And that is utterly frustrating. So I do think that there is an element of frustration and almost what we said in our last pod of people know that we'll just do it. There's almost an acceptance now, I think, in some quarters of, I don't need to teach them to do their shoelaces because they'll learn that at school. Or they'll just learn it through osmosis or it is osmosis, isn't it? Where you naturally learn things.
Yeah.
It's quite hard to know where the line is drawn, isn't it? I know we mentioned certain things are sort of placed in the national curriculum, like telling the time. But yeah, it is a hard line to draw, isn't it? Where... It's just a tricky one. There's things I mentioned just before this podcast. We have a school dinner where we for Christmas. You know, I'm sure lots of schools do Christmas dinner where we eat with the children, and we do that at certain times throughout the year in the lunch hall. You know, you're sitting amongst the children, and I must admit, we've got a fairly mixed catchment. I was surprised with how many children couldn't hold a knife and fork properly, who were holding the knife in their left hand, fork in the right hand, who didn't know just basic etiquette.
Yeah.
We can joke about private school and stuff, but I think there are certain life skills. These children, if they're ever going to eat out, if they're ever going to, you know, they might be that academically, they develop fantastically, but they'll find themselves in situations as young adults where their sort of etiquette, their general sort of social skills just aren't developed to the stage they need to be. And we know how busy the school day is. you know, there is such a cap on how much time we can dedicate to these sorts of things on top of the curriculum.
The question would be, what are they doing at home? Like, how? What? And I mean, we kind of joke about it at work, but certainly our poor early years teachers that have to go into the lunch hall with a lot of the children, because otherwise they chase the peas around the plate, trying to stab them with their fork, and it is a process of showing them that they have to brush them onto the fork, just in case you were wondering how you eat peas. But it is that I would sit there and say, well, surely that is happening at home. Surely someone is sitting there and saying to them.
But I think you probably question. Firstly, the example of a pea, for example, is that being eaten at home?
Yeah.
And if it isn't,
absolutely,
then of course they're not going to have any idea how to encounter and successfully eat it. I think.
Success criteria. Should we put up some success criteria?
Checklist. And David makes a good point. Like, if you're eating out, the location of where you're eating out would depend on what cutlery you're using, if you need cutlery. And again, like, I guess what we're saying here is that depending on our child's home life will completely depend on their sort of openness to experience those things, and then unfortunately, whether we like it or not, I think it does fall under our responsibility.
And it is that thing of, what is our purpose? Are we preparing children to be adults, or are we teaching them how to pass tests? Yeah. Or do you see what I mean? Like, essentially, especially with our very, very, very low or poorly achieving academically children. I would say my priority is to ensure that they are as successful as they can be.
Yeah.
I mean, we have that for every child, but do you see what I'm saying?
In all areas.
I want them to be able to buy something in a shop. I want them to be able to pay a phone bill. I want them to. Thank you.
For me, I totally get the point we're discussing here. I think that. I think that on the whole, those life skills definitely need to be developed prior to a child starting school. I do think we all know individual circumstances where there'll be single parent households, where there'll be multiple siblings, where there'll perhaps be parents who genuinely don't know how to do some of these things themselves. Mm-hmm. And I think those situations are perhaps slightly unique ones where the school can like mop up and sort of help. What I take a bigger issue with personally, and I think that some of what I'm going to say can be impacted by parents having to work very, very long hours, parents, you know, being stretched thin with their time. But what I think certainly appears in the activity passport is parents giving children genuine life experience. So we've talked about the life skills, but taking the time to actually talk to their children, leaving their house, going on a walk, commenting on things they see, asking them questions, discussing just general life process. Because I think a lot of the time there does seem to be a sort of general view that culture has switched towards very much a screen sort of setup where parents aren't giving children time and focus. And I think this isn't just something that's linked to family wealth. I think this happens at both ends of the spectrum, and I think this is actually something, Ben, I know you've mentioned you've been doing a bit of studying on it, haven't you? You've done some writing into this, some research into the topic. But you know, I think that's where I'm noticing, and certainly do notice people talking about that online, a massive disparity in what children do know. And you do get some children who are perhaps not the most or not sort of the highest attainers, but do have very broad life skills. You know, they're very experienced, that you get the impression that they would enter adulthood, you know, well-rounded and be able to, you know, sort of become very solid achieving adults without perhaps have it being the most sort of high-flying academically.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, something that we haven't quite touched on yet, just to kind of round off the podcast, is we're talking about basic function skills, but is there, thinking about that passport, there's also things like going to the beach, climbing a tree, climbing a mountain, I think is one of them.
One
of them was caving. And caving, I said, like, we are fortunate enough to live right next to the South Downs. We've got the New Forest not far away. Where on earth am I supposed to? Where on earth? I mean, those people that happen to live in Tower Hamlet and are educating in Tower Hamlet, good luck with finding a natural cave. Anyway, going back to my point is, how many of those things, is it a case of parents, we would like parents to be doing these things with their child. We are fortunate that, I would say, don't know, plucking a figure, 80% of parents in this country take their children to a park, take them to a beach, etc. We are not expecting every child to visit the Louvre in Paris. We are expecting, is in Paris, isn't it, David?
Yeah.
Just checking with the privacy.
No, it is. Sam and I went there on my stag do, actually.
That is an insight. Sorry, I've got to pause for that. You went to an art gallery on your stag thing.
No, we...
Get out. Honestly, leave. Leave. I mean, no disrespect.
I think we'll leave the stag do for another episode. An evening episode.
Maybe we'll do like Hollyoaks. We'll do a late night podcast.
Oh yeah, that'd be so good.
We might not have careers after. We're not expecting that. But I don't think there's anything wrong with expecting that parents take their children to a beach at some point in 10 years.
I think so. Yeah. I think fundamentally, we as teachers, it would be an ideal situation where all children in our class have done all the things.
Yes.
That would then allow us to have discussions in class without the fear that there'll be a child or many children who've never heard of that, never been there. I think in reality, I think you're right, 80% obviously is a figure that you've plucked from your head, Ben, but I think actually it's just from looking at my class, I'd say it's pretty accurate. And I think those 20% that we now are thinking of, I think, like you said as well, we are always going to do our jobs. Mm. We're always going to do above and beyond probably what's necessary to ensure that there is as level playing field as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we actually wouldn't be teachers if we didn't.
Yeah.
And I think as long as that continues, and I'm sure we will always do it, and I'm sure every other teacher does it, we will do everything we can. And that's the most important thing. And if a child is not fortunate enough to live in a situation where they go to a beach or they climb a tree, I think we have to do our best to fulfill that.
And I think building on Sam's point, I totally, totally agree. But what we're kind of saying is, if the parents that are in a position to be able to provide those experiences do actually make the effort to provide those experiences, then the teachers and the schools are freed up enough to provide the time and effort and energy and resources to those who aren't in that fortunate position. So it's not that we're saying every single parent needs to be able to do that, because some can't. But we want those who can.
I think it's one, isn't it? Yeah. I think the fact is, we are blessed in this country that we have free access. Mm. One of the only, to my knowledge, countries in the world that has free access to museums, galleries.
Mm.
Fine, we totally accept life is expensive, parents are pressured. But we're not saying, as we've already said, we're not saying that you need to go to the Tower of London.
No.
As wonderful as that is, perhaps that is something actually that schools should be supporting and doing because of the fact that it's because of its educational benefits by its very nature. Mm. But everyone can take their kids to the park.
I think so. Yeah. But it's giving time, isn't it?
Yeah. Every town has a park. Every town near enough has a museum of some description. And that doesn't mean, you're right, you have to go to the biggest and the most glamorous ones in the world. You just have to take time to open your children's eyes up.
Yeah, and that's, I think that's it. I think that's
the culture and society.
Yeah, if that's the summary, actually, I think that is it. What we're saying is that there is an obligation. If you decide to have children, there is an obligation that you are going to do the very, very best you can for that child in a myriad of different environments and facets. And one of those is making them that sort of jargon global citizen thing.
Yeah.
Is showing them that the world is bigger than the iPad screen.
I guess what is important to say, and I'm sure people listening will comment, is the fact that the three of us do not have children.
Yep.
But I think we know enough people that do from a broad, broad spectrum. And I hope, and I'm sure I sort of, Sam and Ben would agree, I hope that one day if we do have children that we will follow what we're saying.
And I think it's worth saying that 99% of the people that we know personally do.
100%.
Yeah. Like, it's not that we're not trying to be patronising here.
No.
It's just interesting to see, I'd like that, almost drawing a line between what responsibilities are the schools and what are the parents. And I think whatever the parents' responsibilities are, whatever they don't do, we pick up.
It'd also be really interesting to hear from teachers in like early years setting as well, because I imagine they see some very different things to what we see in terms of children that haven't had that support.
Yeah.
You know, things like toileting, things like, I know Sam has been on, but like basic... Yeah. Basic eating, you know, that sort of thing.
And if when they do home visits before, they get a vibe of parents actually almost having an attitude of, oh, well, it's fine, they can learn that.
It'd be really interesting to hear, wouldn't it?
Homework. Made for teachers, by teachers.
Okay, well, thank you ever so much for listening. As David has just said, please do let us know. We would really love to hear your thoughts on this one. It is a really interesting topic. And if there are any big supporters of the Activity Passport out there, then we would really love to hear
why
your staunch defense. You can please convince us. Build the Alamo, and we shall come. Speak to you soon.
Cheers, thank guys. You.
For much more content exclusively for teachers by teachers, visit homeworkmagazine.co.uk. Also, please follow us on social media at homework_magazine and at homework_podcast. Homework Podcast is brought to you by Iguanas Producciones.